sitting and listening to me. So if I just talk about how, when people are creating displays, how in the past people have thought about communication and how we think about communication now, there's a very traditional way of thinking about communication, which is called, I'll start off with a bit of theory. For those, it's not complicated theory, but I think it's quite useful theory because it does help you think about ways we communicate. So the very traditional way people used to think about communicating is called the transmission absorption theory. And it was developed very much out of the British Victorian education system. And people thought about learning that people absorbed information. So the teacher stood at the front of the classroom and told people information in incremental chunks. So they started off with the easiest bits of knowledge and worked incrementally up to the way up to complex knowledge. And they do this in small pieces, step by step. They break it down into small chunks and feed it to people. And it's quite a passive way of thinking about learning because it's the teacher transmitting the knowledge to the pupils, and the pupils are supposed to be just sat there absorbing the knowledge. So they're quite passive learners. And there's a really brilliant quote from Dickens that really sums up the way the Victorians thought about learning. And this is comes from Hard Times. I'll just read it out to you. It says, "The speaker and the schoolmaster... Mr. Chokumchild, great name, and a third grown-up person present, all backed a little and swept their eyes across the inclined planes of little vessels that here and there arranged in order, ready to have imperial gallons of facts poured into them until they were full to the brim." And that's very much that traditional way of that people are empty vessels waiting to have knowledge poured into their minds. And if you think about most museum displays, actually a lot of displays still work on this model in that they take a subject, they break it down into incremental small chunks, and they create a display that starts at the first bit of information and moves around the room until you've got the last bit of information. And actually what they're expecting the audience to do is stand and read every single panel, every single label, and absorb all that information, and now they understand that subject. And that's a very traditional way of thinking about communication that doesn't necessarily work for all audiences. Not everybody wants to stand and read every single panel and absorb all the information in the room. If you stand in a gallery and watch people, they very rarely start off at the first panel and systematically work their way around the room. What you'll see people are doing is dipping in and out. They'll be drawn to something and then they'll move to something else. They might read another label, but they might miss out a whole chunk because they've been drawn to an object across the room and they go and focus on that. So you can't rely on people following this systematic route around your gallery. You've got to think about people dipping in and out of the space, and maybe what are the key messages that you want to convey, and how might you convey them. So the more modern way of thinking, which is almost an opposing view to this, what's called the transition absorption model, it is called the constructivist theory of learning. And it states that people actually construct their own meaning. They're not passive learners. They're not just standing there absorbing the information. It's all to do with actually their social background. So when somebody comes to read something, the way they then interpret that information depends on their prior knowledge, on their cultural background, their age, their education level, their beliefs. All sorts of things that are already in their mind will affect the way that they read or take in the information that you're going to give to them. And this really emphasises that learning's an active process. So it's not just people absorbing things, they're taking that piece of information and adding it into the matrix of what's already in their minds. So they're trying to make sense or make meaning from what you're telling them. So they're adding this new piece of information into an existing framework. And a really good example of this is many years ago I used to work for Leicester City Museums, and down at Drury War Museum, my office was based down there. So I used to see I used to manage the teachers who led the school sessions, and one of them one day told me that the children, they've been talking about Roman roads, and the children one of them got really confused and thought that the Romans had cars. And when they got to the bottom of it, because she stood and spent a bit of time unpicking that with the child, and what it was is in the child had taken in that they talked about the Romans being an advanced civilization in school, and they'd equated advanced with being like us. So when they saw a road, they thought they must have cars. And we also used to get, there's like a, in Jury Wall, there's like a room setting with a mosaic. And in the corners, a little house shrine that would have been where they prayed to their gods. And some of the children used to think that was a TV. Because it was in a room setting and it looked the shape of a TV. So it's like they were looking at the information and trying to work it out. And sometimes coming to the wrong conclusion. So it is, people are trying to make meaning from what you're saying. So particularly if it's a very new subject that people don't know about a lot, or if you've got lots of things like jargon or technical things, you've got to think quite carefully about, okay, what prior knowledge do people need? What are the people's language needs? Are they going to understand all the language? Are there going to be some technical terms they're not going to get? What do you need? What background information do you need to give people so that they can make the right meaning or make the right connections and not end up thinking that Romans had cars? And one of the most kind of widely used learning theories in museums is called the multiple intelligences theory, and this particularly thinks about the way people prefer to take in information or the way people prefer to learn. So what this theory says is there's actually 9 different types of ways that people prefer to learn. So some people really prefer to learn through language. So some people are very linguistically sensitive. So people who are linguistically sensitive will really like talks, or they'll like a guide taking them around, explaining things to them. People who are visual and spatial obviously are very influenced by the visual elements of displays and maybe the spatial elements of it. So if something's creating a bit of an environment, that helps them because they need to be in a space to understand a subject. Some people are very mathematical and logical, so they're quite systematic. So actually they're the type of people who do like to systematically work their way through a subject. Some people are interpersonal, so they really like to social learning. So people like to arrive in a group and talk about the subject and like it to be a very social experience. Some people are bodily kinesthetic. So this is when people like to learn through doing. The example I always give of this is if you've got a Hoover that's broken, some people will dive in and start trying to work out what's wrong with it by dismantling it. Other people will carefully read the instructions to work it out. So kind of some people are very practical and hands-on and want to learn through doing and being active. Some people are naturalistic, so they like to be out in the environment. So that's great for heritage sites that have kind of outdoor areas. And some people are very intrapersonal, so they actually like to sit and study on their own. They don't like to socially learn. Actually, it's a personal experience. And then finally, some people are musical, and these kind of people are very influenced by things like music and auditory things and patterns in music. So it's not just having musical ability, it's that sense of understanding music. So they appreciate kind of ambient sound in the background to help them understand the context of things. Go and have a Google and do a longer version of it. But I think it's really interesting because it does have an implication for when you're thinking about visitors, that actually people are going to have different preferences. So some of the best displays build in different ways that people can interact with them and people can gain information. So that actually people migrate towards their preference. Some people will get, if it's a bit of an environment you've created with music and sound, actually that all that context, they'll be absorbing a lot from that. Some people do like very systematic displays and they like to read. It's almost if you create different modes of learning within the same space, or you create resources that go with it that enable that. So some very traditional museum displays have guided tours or activity days that actually bring out a greater range of these things. So sometimes it doesn't always have to be in the display. It can be with the things that go with the display. But it's just worth knowing that people that come to your display are going to have different ways they like to absorb the information. And just to let you know, most people are either visual, auditory, or kinesthetic. So they tend to be, most people tend to have a preference for one of those. A lot of the displays focus around those three, either giving information as visual, either telling people about things or having oral histories or sound, or kinesthetics are things to do or activities. So if you've got a range of those three, most audiences will gravitate to one of those. That's just kind of a tip of how to kind of navigate a long list, is most people have a preference for those. So just moving on then, thinking about interpretive strategies. Museums can create quite long formal documents called interpretive strategies. For most smaller organisations, you don't need to quite create it in, because most museums are then creating design briefs for teams of designers or external companies that are coming in to design their displays. But behind those, there's a series of kind of key principles, really, that all museum staff will be considering when they create their displays. So the first one is, what are the key audiences who are going to visit your displays? So who is it aimed at? Is it adults that are visiting in groups together? Is it school children? Is it kind of under fives? Are you aiming it at, special needs pupils or pupils with specific learning needs? Who are you anticipating is going to come in through the door? Is it primarily adults, primarily children, a mix between the two? So ages, different learning needs, different types of groups. So that's the first thing that's worth considering. And sometimes within those groups, the kind of term adults is quite a big term. So I'm going to give you an example of an exhibition that was aimed both at primary school children and a very specific adult audience at the same time, because sometimes you need to break those categories down a little bit further and consider them further. And how do you want to, so what are your key messages you want to display? And it's always worth writing these down, because if you can't write it down on a piece of paper for each other, how are you going to create a display that conveys that message? So what are the really key headline messages or pieces of information that your display wants to communicate? And then how are they going to be organised? So when you go to a museum, sometimes they organise those bits of information or subjects chronologically. Sometimes they'll organise exhibitions by a theme. I mean, they're the main two ways that museums tend to do things. So how are those subjects going to be conveyed? And then what display media, so what different methods of display, will support the communication of these messages to the audience? So a lot of people start by thinking, right, I want a cases and some objects and some panels, whereas it's actually the other way around. So you start and think about, okay, what do I want to communicate? Who am I communicating it to? And what are their needs? So what forms of display methods support the communication of those issues? Because display methods are just a communication tool. There are lots of different ways that you can choose to communicate those issues. And then museums tend to start then thinking about, well, what objects is this subject based around? Is it oral histories? Is it documents? So what resources have we got to tell that story? So they start to then investigate their collections to try and see which key objects or documents they're going to base their interpretation around.